Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers, the only dedicated lifestyle group within Random House. Potter invites readers to live well. We seek tastemakers, visionaries, and rising stars and partner with them to craft books and products that define their brand while engaging, entertaining, and instructing their audience. This week's featured book is Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book, available wherever books are sold. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, I'm Grace Bonney, and you're listening to After the Jump on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen every Monday at noon on HeritageRadioNetwork.com or download the podcast on iTunes. Today, I'm very excited to be sitting here with artist, designer, mother, book writer extraordinaire, Lorena Siminovich. I've known Lorena for years now, and one of the rare chances where internet friends become real friends. So I'm very excited to have her here in the studio with me today. Lorena is originally from Buenos Aires, and she's been living in San Francisco for 6 years now. She has written and illustrated over 20 books, which is more impressive than I can possibly put into words. She's done books with Chronicle, with Templar UK, Candlewick Press, and her books have been published in 7 different languages, and she's also the founder and creative mind behind Petite Collage, which is a modern wall decor and accessories line for children and for adults with a vintage twist. So, Lorena, thanks for taking time to meet with me today.
Thank you for having me. It's very exciting.
So I want to talk about a ton of different things, but I want to start with your background, namely because A, I love your accent, and I'd like to talk about where you're from. And I also just want to know how you got involved with the arts. So tell me a little bit about where you grew up and what role creativity played with that as a child.
So I grew up in Buenos Aires, Argentina, born and raised. I only moved to America about 11 years ago. And I went, like, I had a father who was a graphic designer, and my mother's a teacher. So I grew up very admiring and attached to my father and to all the arts. And I remember him taking me to all these, like, art museums, exhibitions. And I also have a grandma who was an art lover in music and ballet type of thing. So very art-driven family. And at a very young age, I started to be interested in graphic design. So while I was in high school, I was taking graphic design lessons at night. And then soon enough, I started to be an intern in a design department in the National Post Office where we design stamps.
This was in high school?
That was in high school, yes, because in the high school I went to, our hours were 1 to 5. Oh. So I worked in the post office, in the main office of the design, of the post office from 9 to 12 every morning since I was 15 until I finished high school. And then I ended up being a graphic designer on staff in that same department for a few years. And then later on, and we are passing my childhood already very fast, like I move. I opened my own design firm, and they become one of my main clients. And I was basically freelancing designing postage stamps. So even going back to a childhood question, even growing up at a young age, I will go to these like art workshops and just basically after school programs where you go to, you know, like, this place that we would do ceramics and painting, and then eventually I was also teaching kids in that place. Like, that was a huge part of my life just growing up. So I remember my mother not having a place to put on the stuff I would create, like being like kind of like, I will find her like throwing away basically stuff for lack of space. So I've been a little overproductive since a young age, we could say.
That's incredible. Was that common for kids where you grew up to be that involved in work at a young age?
The 15-year-old working thing is more of my father instilled overachiever gene. I won't say that was super common. It was kind of like, but my father was a consultant at the time for the design department. Basically, the post office was sold to private hands and they need to redo all their identity. And my father saw that as an opportunity to kind of like put me in there, let's say. Then eventually, I hope I earned my space in there, but it was kind of a little like pointed. And there was another girl who was also the daughter of somebody else. who eventually, funny enough, she ended up being my design studio manager for, like, later on I hired her, and she worked for me for a year. She lives in Spain now. So I won't say there was the most common thing, but I had a very clear, in my high school, it was very kind of modern and avant-garde, and we have this design, graphic design program after hours. So I took that 2 days a week, and I was like, I love this is what I want to do. Like, wow. I was so, like, I had no question ever. I wasn't those kids that were like, oh, what am I going to do? Like, not once. Like, I was very kind of rooted into this thing. And maybe it's like, you know, your family's just kind of brainwashing into things. Like, you know how you're like, I didn't even question it. I loved it. I, like, knew, you know, fonts. Like, you know, like, it was just this thing. Like, I did and I believed, and that was me. And so then after that, I opened my design firm, which I had until I moved to New York in 2001. Mm-hmm.
So tell me about, I want to know more about the stamps. First of all, I think that's amazing. Do you remember the first stamp that you designed?
The first stamp, I was a part of a team for a while. Mm-hmm. So we will do even other stuff that wasn't necessarily stamps, like all the collateral, all the marketing, all the graphics. Like, we'll design all these, like, forms that people have to fill in and make sure they have space. It was kind of fascinating, like, because you go through a major organization. This is like a place with thousands of employees. Like, you know, it was a lot of, like, basically graphic work of every possible kind. So I don't remember exactly the first one I designed. I don't remember one that I loved, that it was about beekeeping. And there were four stamps that come together kind of as a block. Mm-hmm. Like, and I remember commissioning the photographer. And then we used this special kind of, like, gold foil. And we did all this, like, work with them. It was, like, beautiful. It was just, like, very involved work, but I had to work with the photographer who takes, like, very, very close-up shots of the bees at work, and I was, like, commissioned different stages of making the honey. It was, like, gorgeous. And then...
And P.S., you're, like, 18 when this is happening?
No, this was more when I had my design firm. Like, maybe I was 20 or something. Yeah, 20 or something.
You got a lot of experience in your belt at 20.
Now I know what I'm doing. Another one that was kind of popular, but it wasn't highlight of my design career, was that I had to design stamps for the most popular soccer teams. So I literally, like, I'm not a sporty person. like I never, like, for, like, if you knew me more, you will know, like, this is very removed from any of my interests. So I had to go to all these soccer fields, like, and kind of, like, take photos of the graffitis and all the, it was very interesting. Like, we have a lot of design flexibility, so we put a lot of, like, kind of popular culture in it. It wasn't just like, so long story short, we have the ones from the two main soccer teams, and they sold over 1 million copies.
Oh my God. That's incredible.
So they were not that beautiful, just so you know. but, you know, like, they were a lot of, like, very enriching experiences. And then there were some we had to do because of, like, some sort of agreement, like, more in a kind of national level, like something about some bank or some popular indigenous culture or some different things that had, like, there's a calendar for publishing stamps, and then you have to basically, different designers will do different editions. And some are more, like, for public use, and some are more for collectors. Like, you can still buy them, but they're available for such a short time. And so then we have to do the envelopes for the first day of edition, and then the stamps. Like, there was a lot of, like, memorabilia involved with doing the stamp that it wasn't necessarily the stamp design. Anyway, too much about this.
I can listen to you talk about stamps all day. I think most things in that accent sound about 20 times more interesting anyway.
Thank you.
So I want to talk, I mean, when I think about your work, to me, you have this incredibly clean and very identifiable aesthetic that I associate with you. What role do you think Argentina played in that at all? Or do you think that that's sort of an aesthetic that just kind of comes from within? Because to me, your work feels very different than everything else. And I wonder how that plays in.
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, because between my accent and my weird Romanian last name, and I don't know, I have a German mother. People sometimes are like, you know, and then I have a French company name. It's like,
Where are you from? Lorena?
I'm a brand mess. Yeah. Like, so it's like, okay, well, where do you come from? Or who are you? Or, like, you have a Scandinavian, maybe, I don't know, like, it's very confusing. So it's interesting because I feel there is something very vintage retro 70s that has to do with my aesthetic. That it has to be the books and the graphics that I was exposed to when I was a child. And you have to say, like, yes, I grew up, like, you know, I grew up in the late 70s, the early 80s, and everything got a little later in Argentina. We had no internet. Even a show I was watching, like a cartoon, I was showing my designers in my office the other day, and I realized it was from 1968. But I think everything got there like 10 years later or something, you know? And it's funny because I have this one image of me in kindergarten with like a background of a kind of wallpaper. Mm-hmm. And I always look at the image, I'm like, oh my God, this is so me. Like, this kind of like, it's very bold retro graphics inspire mm-hmm. me. And then I found that this is made by a designer that's German that is called by Graziella. And her daughter inherited the company and they're kind of current today in the children's market. But I just see that and I'm like, I think this is what I was kind of like, mm-hmm. where I'm drawing from.
Yeah.
But I think there is something very strong to me about my graphic design education. Like, I have like a total Swedish type of graphic design school. They're very clean, very minimal. So it's something about what I do that it has to be with designing logotypes and clean aesthetics and graphics. So it's a very, I will say, graphic approach to mm-hmm. illustration.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're coming to New York with that style, what was it like to sort of first, you moved to New York 11 years ago. What was it like to come from Argentina to New York? Do you feel like your style changed at all? Or do you feel like you kind of held on to it more strongly because of the change?
Interestingly enough, A, I did nothing like this before moving to New York.
Oh,
B,
okay.
I didn't have that style. Like, first of all, like, I was a graphic designer with a design firm with a few people working with me. I closed the design firm, like, and I came to New York with a backpack, like, I'm going to do this. So I had all this meetings, some of them with very relevant design players and great people, like had a lot of names, and I was very lucky to meet with great amazing people, and I wanted to find a career in graphic design, but I also thought that I wasn't the kind of like traditional firm material. Like, I was like, okay, either go with the pentagrams mm-hmm. of the traditional peoples of the world, or what can be there. So I found my first job in New York in the New York Times, in the classified section, cutting little pieces of paper and putting them in a journal.
This wow.
is my, and okay. this was 2001. It wasn't that yeah. long ago. Basically, I came in and my friend who owns a company here, he's like, you're going to spend all your money. You need to find a job now. I mm-hmm. was like, what do you mean? Like, I have a little savings and I have these interviews and I made this gorgeous portfolio with the best photographers, like totally yeah. over the top. And he was like, no, chop, chop. So I found my first job in New York actually looking in the Sunday New York Times, wow. classifieds. So I started working in this company where I worked all the time. I live in New York. And we did stationery and children products and games and so mm-hmm. on. And the company was recently sold mm-hmm. to Chronicle Books. And so in that company, basically, I find my voice in the whole like merchandising mm-hmm. World and making stuff and product development, when I realized I was such a passion. So I almost shifted my career from mm-hmm. graphic design to that. And then what happened, and this is more personal, but my brother is a children's book illustrator. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there was no space for me to do that too in Argentina. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that more and more in New York. And I started to basically illustrate some of the products I will do mm-hmm. in this company. So I almost found my voice and the kind of quotation mark style while in New York. And then it completely really took off when I moved to San Francisco. I was like, okay, I'm here. When we had to move, I may as well do my stuff. And it basically came very spontaneous. I was doing a gift for a friend and I took some papers. And basically it was a whole kind of serendipity coincidence where I found my voice and my style. And then I kind of like went way deeper and deeper and deeper. And this is who I am today. But it wasn't something that I did these little things forever or anything. It was very like a found voice. It's an interesting process now that I think about it. You're making me think about all this stuff.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to talk more about finding your voice and moving to San Francisco.
Awesome.
Got Stitcher? Heritage Radio Network is on it, so get it. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers. This week's featured book is Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book by Kelly Lillian. Beautifully designed in the Pantone Swatch Book format, Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book is filled with 50 classic cocktail recipes for colorful entertaining. Internet bon vivant Miss Lillian takes a fanciful approach to cocktail making in this retro chic swatch book, which includes 20 recipes for blended cocktails, 20 recipes for shaken cocktails, and 10 recipes for punch bowls. Every classic recipe is accompanied with a modern twist and chic accoutrements. Simply fan the book out to your desired recipe, look at the card, and instantly know which ingredients the cocktail requires from the glossy four-color photographs. The gorgeous cover design is dazzling on a bar cart, coffee table, or at any cocktail party. Recipes include Miss Palmer, Miss Basil Rita, Miss Collins, Miss Julep, Tequila Granita, Brunch Punch, Senorita Spin, and many more. Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book is $14.99 and is available wherever books are sold. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is the most trusted media outlet for real, quality conversations about food. That experience will come to life at our first annual members-only fundraiser party on September 9th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Enjoy the best food in the world from talent including Michael Anthony, award-winning chef from Gramercy Tavern, Brooks Headley, award-winning pastry chef from Del Posto, Shauna Pacifico at Back 40 West, sustainable seafood from Sea to Table, and much more, including drinks made by Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues, craft beer from Greenpoint Harbor Brewery, wine from Cane Vineyard and Winery in the Napa Valley, and plenty more. Radio is back, and this will be a special, exclusive experience in the back garden of Roberta's that you don't want to miss. September 9th, 5 to 8 p.m. Buy tickets at heritageradionetwork.eventbrite.com.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to After the Jump on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm talking with artist, designer, author, and working mom extraordinaire, Lorena Simonovich. So before the break, we were talking about sort of your history growing up in Buenos Aires and your relatively early experience in the working field as a graphic designer, working with the company that controlled postage stamps and packaging. But now I want to get into a little bit about how you started your own business. I mean, you sound like you've been pretty entrepreneurial from a young age. But I want to sort of talk about the birth of Petite Collage. Tell me how that came about.
My husband had to relocate to San Francisco, and I started to work still in my, I was a creative director for a gift company in New York, and I was very attached, and they were very attached, and I decided just to keep working for them from San Francisco for about 1 year, which meant coming 13 times to New York in 1 year, which was clearly taking a toll, and waking up at 6 in the morning and, like, you know, being like online with them, and my design team was still in New York, and I only had one person in San Francisco working with me. So that was difficult. When I moved, I only took the children's division with me. The other stationery divisions would hire some help. It was still really hard. So I realized, like, it wasn't a long-term possibility. At the same time, one of my best friends still, and the author of some of the books I illustrate coincidentally, was having a baby. And I was feeling very computer slave with this whole, like, video commuting, like, just being... you know, like, attached to, like, when they need me and whatever, is this kind of paranoia that, you know, they can call, you know, it's like, so I decided that I needed to this kind of contact with the papers and the actual materials again. So I literally, like, pulled a box of paper. I always been a fan of collecting papers and flea markets. And so this was a passion. I just didn't do anything with them. So I pulled this out and I made a little collage of a owl mom, dad and baby. And I brought it to their kind of baby shower. And they loved it. And I was like, I lost sleep like that week. And I was like, and I always wanted to work with wool. So I was starting to figure out the medium. So long story short, I started to make collages with found papers on maple plywood. And I had an upcoming trip to New York. So I took these collages to stores in Brooklyn. And they placed orders right away. And then, like, they even told me, like, this is how much you charge. This is how you do it. And the lady was like, I'm placing an order now because you artists, like, you know, you're all over the place. Like, if I don't do this, you're not going to send them to me. And this was, you know, 6 years ago before the economic crisis. So they were original pieces of art and they were, you know, they were pricey. And then I went to another store, which was a beautiful children's store. And I said, this other store placed an order. And I was basically on this, like, stroll, like, kind of like selling left and right. So that went well and unusual, and I feel like I didn't know any better, and I was very naive, and it's not that I recommend people to go with a product and stock store owners. It was kind of bizarre. And then from there I started selling a lot of these collages, and then I realized, not fast enough, but I realized that we needed to basically make more products at a more affordable price point. Like, mm-hmm. this has a specific size, a specific yes. look, and a very high price point. And people like the graphics, but maybe they didn't want to buy that size, mm-hmm. which was fairly small, 10 by 10. So I started to make alphabet posters based on that aesthetic. And I started to make laser cut mobiles, which mm-hmm. are one of my signature items right now. And I basically expanded the line. And then a little later on, I added the prints on wood, which are also one of our signature mm-hmm. styles. We have about 40 different styles now. So the line was growing very organically until recently, where I decided to be more serious about it. I basically had a kid.
Mm-hmm. Just small yeah. life change.
Yeah, small detail. and the main thing is that I think when you have a kid, you go just like, well, if I'm not going to be with this kid, I may as well be do something very, exactly. very productive.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this moment where your head goes like, okay, well, this can be like organic.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you have to prioritize the decision. It's like, if you're going to be away from your child for a while, it needs to be something you really love. And that's really important.
Yes. And coincidentally, I happen to be a part of a women entrepreneur competition mm-hmm. that I happen to win among other ladies. So I got a business coach and this kind of reward from American Express and so on. And I was like, whoa, I can do this. It was like almost like a pat in the back. Like, mm-hmm. you have it on you. You're, you know, entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Just go and do it. So I hire more people and I now have a wonderful team. And we expanded the line. And now we also do toys and puzzles and dolls and a variety of things, all based on this style. So we are more of a mm-hmm. lifestyle brand. Where we have different formats or different products that basically carry our look and our graphics. Mm-hmm. And we sell in stores worldwide, and we also sell directly in my website. And that's kind of in a nutshell.
Yeah. I mean, from the outside, it's always seemed like it's been the most seamless like transition ever from graphic designer to like wildly successful company. What were some of the sort of roadblocks you hit along the way?
First of all, manufacturing is a pain in the yeah. parts, like
pain in the parts.
Like, it's really like a freaking nightmare, and you have a lot of basically your money is tied up in inventory. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a struggle on itself. The whole like bootstrapping your little business.
Exactly.
I also think that I had kind of an awakening of you are basically running your business. You're not going to be like designing, doing the art. Like, you have a lot to be doing. Like, yes. basically, my week is like meeting with the bank for an extension of the credit line. And, you know, like, it's just a lot of unglamorous or like business-like stuff that mm-hmm. I happen to like because I'm very entrepreneurial mm-hmm. and I happen to have help both in my office and in my personal life, in my house with a nanny, my mm-hmm. blah, blah. But you really have to kind of like part your day, and it may not be that I'm like just kind of like creating and looking at Pinterest all day. Mm-hmm. Like no. Like, I'm dealing with an HR termination form, you know, like, it's a lot of stuff, like discussing production prices or yeah. overhead. You know, it's just a lot of working on the business, like on the big picture type of thing.
How do you keep that balance? I mean, we were talking a little bit before we started recording today, and that's something that's been a topic on this show for a while now, is sort of finding a way to keep that work life, happiness, inspiration, all of that stuff in balance. How do you find room for that when you've got a child, you've got a husband, you've got a business, you've got the admin parts, and you still have to find room in your brain to be excited and keep the business going in terms of creativity? How do you manage all that?
And don't forget the book writing and illustrating.
Oh, just the 20 books that you've done. Just no big deal on the side.
2 a.m. I think that there is some beauty, like there's a lot of pain and a lot of beauty in running your own business. And the main beauty or perk is that you have control of your schedule and your life. So I do leave at 3 to go see my kid ballet recital or whatever may be needed. I happen to have an office 10 blocks from my house, which is very convenient. I don't think I master it, honestly, but I think we become better at leisure and at like just taking time off. And in mm-hmm. a weird way, I see that paying off. Like, it's just like the other day we took a couple of days off, and I came back and I never did more in a day. Like, it just like re-energizes you, and it's just I'm starting to understand more how important it is. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like kind of quintessential. I was like, I couldn't do it. And I also feel like I find inspiration in the most interesting places, and it may not be being in the office. Like, you just have to kind of give yourself that permission mm-hmm. to be kind of re-energized, and it's just wonderful. You work with like new batteries instead of like all dead batteries and internet that doesn't load, you know,
exactly.
like you're just your new self. So I try to balance that, but in this business competition I won, there is like a mentor and a nonprofit in New York called Count Me In, and the founder is called Nell Merlino, which is a fascinating woman who invented Check Your Daughters to Work Day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's fascinating. And she, one of the things she says that most resonated with me, she's kind of a mentor in a way, is you can have it all if you don't do it all.
Ah, okay.
So I think the art of delegating is one of the most difficult things for an entrepreneur, and I became kind of good at that, and mm-hmm. having an amazing team that helps me and that supports me in the office and in all the product development and in everything I do. But I think the main thing is, like, it's hard because you realize, like, you know, like, it's easier to do it all yourself, work 24 mm-hmm. hours a day, and you probably will be more profitable than if you have payroll, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
But it's also, like I need that healthy mind to be kind of, you know, a person also. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a struggle. But I also, I'm very good at asking and getting resources and questions and kind of having a network. Mm-hmm. But not only in the craft and art world or publishing world, but also in the entrepreneurial world. And these may be people that are not in our arena. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to go with a scholarship to Tuck Business School last year for an executive entrepreneurship class that was 10 days, and I met people from all different worlds, like, mm-hmm. you know, construction companies, like, very different. It was a minority-oriented program, and it just gave me this perspective that we are just this, we think everything is, you know, crafts and mm-hmm. what we do, and there's such a big world, and there's so much to learn. So I'm in a few groups of, you know, people that we exchange ideas, and that's really helpful. I recommend that, you know, like, to get that kind of support from mm-hmm. your peers, even that they may not be doing the exact same thing, even better.
I think it can be better to talk to people who aren't sort of mired down in the same world of, like, patterned paper all day. I think it can be good to open up your brain. So when you're not working, what are the things you like to do? What are your hobbies outside? I feel like everyone from San Francisco has a hobby, and that does not exist in New York. I want to what are the things you do to unwind when you're not working?
Interestingly enough, because work is so tied up, last week, for instance, one of my best friends drove down from Vancouver, and we met in Seattle because I had to go to the gift show. And interestingly enough, we went, like, shopping and looking for, like, books and toy stores. Like, it's something that is very embedded in what I do. Mm-hmm. So I do enjoy that a lot. Like, you know, we spend hours in this gorgeous bookstore in Seattle. But we do have a gorgeous garden in my house, and my husband has a vegetable garden, and we kind of, like, try to do stuff in the house. Mm-hmm. We also enjoy... We are lucky that everything is so close by in San Francisco. So we basically enjoy very quick, instead of a long vacation that is sometimes difficult, we do a lot of really quick getaways. Mm-hmm. Like 3 days, 4 days, rent a house here, go to a hotel there, even for the day sometimes. You know, you just can't get out. In a half hour, you're eating in the beach.
Yeah.
So I will say that I try to almost, like, mesh it and, like, blend it into my week instead of making this whole, like, okay, stop everything, I'm going away for a long time, because I do go away for trade shows and, yes. like, you know, as it is, as I'm here
yeah,
right now.
And those are not vacations. Yeah. yeah.
So I will say that my latest effort is to kind of, like, intertwine, is that even a word?
It is now. Now
it's a word. Like, mix it up with my daily life, you know, of, like, mm-hmm. oh, take off early. Like, the other day, a friend happened to be a creative friend, and we went to the Dolores Park with my kid and had breakfast in the park, and then I was in the office at 11. So it's almost like, may not be the big getaway mm-hmm. in the Caribbean, but I try to have little moments where it feels really a lot of life and not necessarily, like, office.
I think that's such a great note to end on. I'm so happy you do things like that. I think that's why you're such a wonderful example of somebody who's still running a passion-based business. Like, I see a lot of people who are following the things they love and then eventually burn out because they're not finding a way to, like, keep those moments in their life that keep them inspired. You do a really good job of that.
Certainly try.
So we've run out of time. Before we leave, tell me what's coming up and what people should be looking out for from both your own work and for Petit Collage.
All right. So in Petit Collage, we have exciting new things, which is more affordable toys and more affordable price points, which people have been asking for. So we just launched puzzles and games and this type of things, and we are very excited. On my writing and illustrator life, I have a book that just released from Penguin that is called Monkey See, Look at Me. And it's my first book in the U.S. that I've written and illustrated. And it's a large picture book. It's very cute, inspired by my daughter. And then we're also launching a series with Chronicle that are going to be branded Petit Collage, which will be board books, which will be the branded Petit Collage books, which is exciting. And then I have more of an adult craft book coming up that I can't say much about, and it will take a while, and I haven't even started writing that, so add that to my to-do list.
That sounds great. Well, I'm glad you took time to talk to me. I feel like you need to go take a nap now. You've got a lot on your plate. Thanks so much for talking with us today, Lorena.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with the gift fair, and thanks to everybody for listening. You can check out Lorena online at lorenasiminovich.com and petitecollage.com. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.